Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. We start with citrus news today.
My Ag Life in Citrus is brought to you by Soil and Crop Incorporated, your number one resource for sustainable crop nutrition by putting nature to work for you.
The National Institute of Food and Agriculture from the U.S. Department of Agriculture has announced an investment of nearly $11 million for research to combat Wonglong bean disease, or citrus greening disease. The NIFA director, Dr. Carrie Castile, says the Emergency Citrus Disease Research and Extension Program brings the nation's top scientists together with the citrus industry representatives to find scientifically sound solutions to combat and prevent HLB at the farm level. This year's awards represents all three major U.S. citrus growing regions and include possible solutions ranging from blocking HLB transmission from inside the insect vector to utilizing novel antimicrobial peptides to treat HLB-infected trees. Wonglong bean is considered the most destructive disease in citrus-growing regions worldwide and has become the greatest challenge for the U.S. citrus industry. Currently, there is no cure for HLB. Since HLB's initial U.S. detection in 2005, citrus acreage in Florida has decreased by 60%, production in Florida has decreased by 80%, the disease has spread to all citrus-producing states, including Texas and here in California. Pakistan expects to enhance orange exports to China this year. An advisor to Prime Minister on Commerce and Investment pointed out that the mango season has already provided good revenues. In the 2020-2021 season, Pakistan exported a record 460,000 tons of oranges, marking this as the highest ever volume during any season. In that export season that ended in April, around 460 tons of oranges had been exported from the country worldwide, which is up 30% compared to the previous season. Homegrown Organic Farms is pleased to introduce the Buck Brand Organic Specialty Citrus Micro Brand. The new brand will add to the growing list of specialty micro brands like the recently announced Mammoth Kiwi program. The Buck Brand program includes more than 40 specialty citrus items and offers everything from kumquats to finger limes to Buddha's hands and mango oranges. The plantings are focused on high flavor fruit to create an exceptional eating experience. The ranch's most notable variety is its heirloom navel, with some groves dating back more than 100 years and boasts first-generation old-stock navel orange trees. These items are all grown on a 250-acre hillside farm just outside of Porterville. That's our citrus update. Here's news from the rest of agriculture. Ag groups are reacting to the Environmental Protection Agency's proposed rule to replace the Navigable Waters Protection Rule, and they're not happy with the idea. The proposed rule would reestablish the pre-2015 definition of waters of the U.S. American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval says his group is disappointed that the agency is returning to an, quote, overly complicated interim water rule. He says, quote, overreaching regulations create major permit backlogs for the federal government and result in long delays for farmers and ranchers working hard to keep American fed. That again from American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told Bloomberg that the Biden administration would likely remove some punitive tariffs on Chinese imports. She says there is an ongoing process to try to figure out what America's best approach to China will be going forward. Last month, U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai said the administration will directly engage with China to enforce commitments to the Asian nation made in a trade deal with former President Donald Trump. U.S. Senator John Tester of Montana introduced legislation to suspend Brazilian beef imports to the United States. The move comes after repeated issues with delayed reporting of BSE or mad cow outbreaks in Brazilian beef. Suspending the imports will give experts a chance to conduct a thorough review of the meat safety. It took until September before Brazil announced two cases of atypical BSE that were detected in June. Most countries report outbreaks to the World Organization of Animal Health within days. That's our news today. When we come back, we focus on the Farm Bill. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com. The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Welcome back. At the recent National Association of Farm Broadcasting conference that I was at, there was a session on the Farm Bill featuring former Senator Pat Roberts, former Congressman Colin Peterson, and the director of the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri, Pat Westerhoff. In today's show, we have parts of that session for you. Session moderator was Spencer Chase of AgriPulse.
Appreciate everybody making time this morning to join us for an opportunity to learn a little bit about the Farm Bill. When we plotted out this session, we kind of had the idea of talking about the economics, and then the idea also came to mind of let's talk about the politics facing folks as they plan the upcoming Farm Bill. So I'm really excited about the three gentlemen that we have joining us. Kicking things off today is going to be Pat Westhoff, the director of the Food and Agriculture Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri, and the Howard Cowden Professor of Agricultural and Applied Economics at the MU Division of Applied Social Sciences. A native of Manchester, Iowa, where he grew up on the family dairy farm, he has a BA in Political Science from the University of Iowa and an MA in Latin American Studies from the University of Texas, as well as a PhD in Ag Economics from Iowa State University. He joined FAPRI in 1996 and has worked on a range of projects in the United States, Europe, Africa, and Latin America. Also joined by two former folks from Capitol Hill on the screen will be Colin Peterson, who represented Minnesota's 7th District from 1991 to 2021. He served as chairman and ranking member of the U.S. House Ag Committee from 2005 to 2021, was instrumental there in writing and passing 4 farm bills. He is a nationally recognized expert on agricultural policy and has a strong reputation for his steadfast commitment to bringing everyone to the table while offering positive and practical solutions to difficult problems. He is currently the president and founder of his government affairs and public policy firm, the Peterson Group, and also has a partnership with Combest Sell and Associates in Washington, D.C., to advise and consult on policies that bolster U.S. agriculture and rural America. And last but certainly not least, the gentleman to my right, Senator Pat Roberts, is a partner with Capital Council, LLC. Roberts joined the firm as a former senator and congressman from Kansas and served in the Senate for 23 years as chairman of both the Senate Agriculture Committee and Senate Intelligence Committee. While serving in the House of Representatives, Roberts was chairman of the House Ag Committee and became the first member in the history of the United States Congress to have chaired both the House and Senate Agriculture Committees, was also the ranking member of each committee. Roberts there built a reputation as a national leader on agriculture, healthcare, and defense, in addition to being recognized as a leader in food and biosecurity issues. So the way we're going to have this work is I'm going to ask Pat Westhoff to offer kind of the economic backdrop facing the House and Senate Agriculture Committees as they prepare to write this bill, and then we'll ask the former members of Congress to dive into the political backdrop facing the United States Congress. So, Pat, please take it away.
Well, thanks a lot for the opportunity today. I very much wish I could be with you there in person, but life sometimes gets in the way. My grandson lives with us, and he picked up a case of COVID at his local preschool, unfortunately. And we thought the rest of us could be home free. My daughter got a positive test yesterday, so that's why I'm talking to you from here instead of talking to you in person like I had hoped to be. So I got a few slides I'll start off with here, if that's okay. First, I want to talk about the mostly good news on the crop side and livestock as well. We're seeing much higher prices for a lot of the major commodities this year than we had seen in recent years. We have a $5.45 average price for corn projected by USDA for the current marketing year, for example, and some informal projections we're putting together this week for review purposes suggest the price staying about $4.80 a bushel for the crop that will be harvested next year if we have normal weather conditions and everything else plays out as we currently anticipate. So while that's down from the current year's crop price, you know, it's still well above the levels we saw a couple of years ago. That same story holds for soybeans, for wheat, for cotton, and for any number of other products on the crop side. On the livestock side, we may see stronger prices for cattle in 2022 versus 21. So again, lots of good news in that respect. But of course, on the not so good side, operating costs have definitely increased sharply in recent months. And there's real concern about even availability of certain inputs for next year's crops. Fertilizer costs are up dramatically. You can see some very, very preliminary estimates there we put together recently, and even that's assuming that the current super high spot prices we see for nitrogen and other fertilizers will actually come back down at least a little bit between now and spring. But with the numbers we've got there, we're talking about another $55 an acre for corn fertilizer costs in 2022 versus what they were in 2020. Additional costs there for seed, for fuel, for any variety of other inputs as well. So over $70 an acre of additional costs for a corn producer in 2022 versus 2020, and a smaller increase for soybeans since it's not quite so dependent on nitrogen fertilizer. So again, the good news, again, on the crop receipt side, these are numbers we did back in September. I think if we were to redo them today, we wouldn't have a dramatically different story. A very large increase in cash receipts to the farm sector in 2021 on the crop side, with corn, soybeans, and other major crops leading the way. Blue is the contribution from corn, green is the contribution from soybeans, red are all the other major program crops, and hay, and then the orange is one at the top there is everything else, fruits, vegetables, et cetera. You know, so more than a $50 billion increase in cash, or roughly a $50 billion increase in cash receipts in 2021 versus 2020, remaining around that level in 2022 if things play out as we currently anticipate, and only a slight pullback in subsequent years. Livestock, likewise, a pretty good size increase in 2021. We had very depressed livestock markets last year, especially in the spring, that reduced dramatically receipts to the livestock sector in the early months of 2020. It rebounded pretty strongly this year. Could even see a bit stronger picture in 2022 than shown in this chart if cattle markets do improve in the months ahead. Production expenses, of course, are up already pretty sharply this year. These are numbers we had back in September. If we redo them now, I'm certain we would show a larger increase in production expenses in 2022. You know, so that's offsetting the good things on the receipt side. And if overall bottom line for farm income, these are again numbers from September. We have a pretty good level of farm income in 2021, over $120 billion we estimated at that time. Again, I think if we were doing a new snapshot today, it'd be very similar to that level for the current calendar year. In nominal terms, that's approaching or very close to the record of 2013. Real terms, not quite that high, but still a pretty good level of net income this year. That falls off in 2022, and one of the main reasons why is the right-hand chart. So government payments were a record $46 billion in calendar year 2020. They'll be high again this year, you know, probably in the neighborhood of $30 billion, depending on just how many of the various disaster program checks go out between now and the end of the calendar year. And then based on these numbers back in September, when before the latest round of special payments were announced, you know, we'd be dropping back down not only to, but even below the levels we saw for the period between 2006 and 2018. Again, revised numbers would be a little higher for 2022, once we take into account the extra disaster payments and other things that were approved after the 1st of September. But still a very, very sharp drop off on that side, explaining a lot of the drop that we see in farm income. As the increase in receipts is being offset by the increase in costs, the net income drop is largely because of the drop in payments. I think what this means for real estate and rental markets, you know, rental prices are almost certainly going to be up in 2022. The only question is how much. Going forward, of course, depends how markets evolve in subsequent years. Farm real estate values, these are numbers from September. Again, we were at that time projecting a significant increase in farm real estate values in 2022. I think more recent reports suggest it'll be even higher than this unless things retreat in the months ahead. The fact that we have a bit of a dip after that, again, reflects the fact that The baseline assumes a little bit of increased interest expenses in later years, and that, you know, could be a bit of a drag on land values. But of course, we're coming at this from a period of very dramatic growth in just the last couple of years' time. And again, as we're trying to set the tone for the next farm bill debate, you know, just remind ourselves where we are in terms of where the spending comes from. The blue part of the bars here are going to be the basic farm commodity program payments, ARC, PLC, the dairy program, things like that. Green's going to be crop insurance. Red's going to be the various conservation programs, and the orange at top are the special programs we've had the last several years in the disaster program spending. 22 again will be higher once we get the final checks in the mail. Note that crop insurance is the largest single part of the farm safety net going forward, you know, on average, and it depends on the year, of course, but under average conditions, whereas the basic farm bill commodity programs, if current prices are not only don't have to keep current prices, if current prices don't retreat too much, we just won't have a lot of spending on the ARC and PLC side of things, and maybe the dairy program won't cost much either. So, you know, if you think about this in terms of baseline sense, there'll be a lot more crop insurance dollars to talk about in the farm bill debate than the BRC and PLC payments to talk about, unless the market condition changes dramatically in the next couple of years. So some policy issues, first of all, not related to the farm bill. We've got the reconciliation bill, of course, that's being considered today in the House. Does it actually get done? If so, you know, do the current provisions in the House bill come out of the final part of the process to do with enhanced spending on conservation programs and a variety of other things as well? Biofuel policy, we still don't have a renewable fuel standard for 2021, let alone 2022. Everybody's expecting it to come any day, but we've got the word it's not going to be the day, apparently. So when are we going to hear about that? Then after 2022, you know, the provisions of the RFS become a bit more murky. I think the expectation might have been back in 2007 that we have new legislation passed. You know, does that actually get done, or is this going to be done by EPA deciding what they think the appropriate way to run the RFS is going to be in years after 2022? We, of course, have a disaster that's already been approved. What other types of things might happen, appropriations bills in the months to come? And, of course, what will the administration do under the Commodity Credit Corporation Charter Act and things like that? The next farm bill, again, I'll let my other partners here who can speak more knowledgeable than I can where things are going to go from here, but just a couple of quick points. Obviously, who's running Congress in 2023 matters. What will the budgetary target be? So in 2018, you know, there was kind of an agreement going in that the net effect of the new farm bill on the federal budget deficit should be zero. And indeed, that's the bill that was passed. In 1996 and 2014, the expectation was that the farm bill had to save money. In 2002, that rare circumstance occurred where the new farm bill was allowed to have an increase in spending relative to a baseline. And of course, what will the budget priorities be? Will it be nutrition, conservation, climate change, commodity programs, crop insurance, et cetera? So that's us. Now, thank you very much for the opportunity this morning. Be glad to hear the conversation. That's our crowd as of 2019, but we've had some departures since that time, unfortunately for us. Scott Gilt on the far left there joined the American Soybean Association. To his right there, or his left, I should say, is Seth Meyer, USDA's chief economist, and the back row, Young Jun Kim and Abby Mefford have both left us. So if you know a good economist, let me know. We're trying to hire. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you for that. Obviously, a very good economic backdrop there as we try and look at how we're going to cover this next farm bill process. But the economics are only part of the equation, as we all know, and so let's dive into the politics of the matter. And
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Being that we have a House Democrat and a Senate Republican, I'm going to ask, first off, I'm going to start with Chairman Peterson and see if you can offer up the political backdrop facing, of course, not only the House, but also the Democratic Party as a whole.
So I thought you'd go with seniority and let Chairman Roberts start, but
well, we're already used to looking at the screen, so we just figured we'd keep our attention there.
Okay. Well, I think you know, as Pat indicated, that probably the number one thing that's got to be decided, you know, in terms of what's going to happen with the farm bill, is going to be who controls Congress. And right now, it looks to me like it's probably going to be the Republicans in the House, unless something drastically changes. And the Senate, you know, I don't know how to read that, but it looks to me like it can probably go either way. And so that's the first thing that's going to have to be decided. And I say the big challenge politically, you know, no matter who controls Congress, is going to be trying to keep these guys out of the ditch and keep them from fighting with each other, which they seem to do over everything that comes up. And, you know, Pat and I worked hard and others over the years to make sure that at the end of the day, whatever we came up with had support from both parties and both sides of the Capitol, and everybody buying into it. We're not seeing that anymore, you know, and I think what's going on right now on the House floor, you know, you can't get anything done long-term that's going to stick with one party, no matter what, you know, and that's the big challenge here, you know, from not allowing the ag community and the ag committees get into the same kind of situation they are right now with this reconciliation bill. How we can be helpful with that, you know, Pat and I are going to have to try to figure out. I think I feel a responsibility to try to be part of that to help make sure that that does not happen. But it's not easy. And, you know, you see the last two farm bills, I mean, you know, both of them were defeated before they were passed. And, you know, the bill I wrote was actually vetoed twice. You know, so it's not easy to come to a final conclusion. But if you have one, say the Republicans take over the House and the Senate, and they write a partisan farm bill doesn't have the Democrats on board, you know, if they stay in power for a long time, that might be fine. But if it goes back the other way, then you're going to see it, you know, change, probably. So, you know, I would say the big challenge is trying to keep the Ag Committee bipartisan, trying to, you know, make sure that folks get along and come to a conclusion. If I had my crystal ball, no matter who's in charge of this thing, I think it's going to be very difficult to get a farm bill passed under any circumstances. And you could have a situation where you've got, you know, a continuation of what's going on, you know, or, you know, because they can't come up with anything else. The other wild card is what's going to happen. Does this reconciliation bill pass? How does it impact agriculture? You know, it looks like we dodged the bullets. You know, the bad things that could have happened are not there. But the increased spending that's in there is not necessarily in the baseline. And so how does that all play out, you know, in the future? And it's just, you know, the extra money is going to go into all this climate change stuff and conservation, which is fine. The problem is I don't think we really know what it is that we can do that's going to actually work, you know, in agriculture in any significant way in those areas beyond what we're already doing. So that's going to be a wild card. From my own point of view, the most important thing is to protect crop insurance from the do-gooders that want to add all kinds of payment limitations and other kinds of climate initiatives to crop insurance, which I think is very problematic. And so it's going to be a challenge. And, you know, I don't know if Pat feels the way I do, but some days I'm kind of glad I'm not there to have to worry about it. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Pat. He's got all the right answers.
Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. Salty, closed soils can render your crops unproductive. DSAL, formulated by AgroPlanté, is specially designed for sodic and saline sodic soils. DSAL will displace sodium and wash it out of the root zone with irrigation to enhance your soil structure, water penetration, and vitality by decreasing soil salinity. AgroPlanté's DSAL flocculates your soil to promote soil aeration and drainage. With DSAL, you'll create a better soil environment for your crop roots and optimize yield. Contact AgroPlanté today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at agroplanté.com.
So, Chairman Roberts, interested in your thoughts on the issues, the political issues, the political background facing the Senate and the Republican Party as a whole.
Wow. Well, I agree with Colin.
That was succinct. I appreciate that.
Well, no, we worked together. We had sort of a secret relationship. I sang in his band one time. You still have that band?
Well, I'm trying to get it back together, Pat, but I'm looking for a backup singer, so I don't know if you're available.
Yeah, well, I was... first he got me on the smart juice, and then he got me up there just saying, I can't sing. I'm a monotone. And he got a big kick out of me standing up there and making an additional... What do you call those people? Oh, fools, yes, of yourself. But Carl and I always got along. It isn't like we voted like all the time. But that didn't matter because we knew that we had to have certainty and predictability on the farm bill. I want to allude to something that I've been pretty noisy about. Not many people really understand it. They just know that things are pretty sad up there. The Ag Committees, and I've been on 8 farm bills. I was very privileged to do that, and even some before then when I was a staffer for my predecessor. But we always had a bipartisan approach. Now, we had our differences in the committee, don't misunderstand me. But in the end result, we knew we needed certainty and predictability. That's the tag we put on the last farm bill. And we knew that we had to get it done, regardless of the fact that it may not be the best possible bill, but it's the best bill possible. That's a quote from Kiko de la Garza way back in the day, a great man indeed. But I'm very worried about the fact that everybody, and I know they ask Colin this too, says, well, when is the pendulum going to swing back? And I said, I'm not sure it'll swing back. It'll swing, but we have yet to determine that. And the key here is whether or not the Senate keeps the 60-vote margin. It used to be 67. I'd like to go back to that. If you have a 60-vote margin, it's a lot easier for me because it forces me and it also forced Deb Stabenow to work with me as well and our staffs, and we had a sort of a mutual agreement there. Colin had a little bit different situation over there, but he always perseveres. And it means that to get 60, I have to get Democrat votes if I'm the Republican chairman, vice versa with Senator Stabenow. If you don't have it, you get 51. Now, that's called the legislative filibuster. That's fancy talk. I guess maybe people think of Jimmy Stewart, which dates me, with regards to a filibuster. The key is to keep the 60-vote margin, or you will not be forced. And it isn't forced. This is just the way you should really run things, especially in the Ag Committee. We've always had a bipartisan approach in the end result. I hope we can somehow rescue that. But if we go to 51, it's going to be trench warfare. And that's what we're seeing right now. This might as be, you know, World War I and trenches and mustard gas. I mean, it's just, and that mustard gas is ideology. And if people got all wrapped around the axle about ideology, that's fine. I mean, you can always vote no or yes, you know, depending on your point of view. But you have to come together in order to get a farm bill. Historically, we both would all agree that that first year when you're trying to put together, you get around the country just as much as you possibly can. You sit down on the wagon tongue and listen to farmers and truly listen. I know that's what Stabenow and I did, and I know that Colin always did that, at least by himself if he couldn't do it with his Republican counterpart. I always enjoyed Colin so much during the conference that we would have, and that we would sort of hit a problem, and I'd look at him, and he'd raise his eyebrows, and he'd start laughing, not out in front. And I always knew that, well, he always knew I had his back, and I always knew that, you know, he had mine. And it's not that we voted alike every time, but when it came to agriculture, we were right there. And I really appreciate those days, Colin, and I appreciate you as a great friend. If we keep this 51 business up, I'm just afraid we're not going to get out of those trenches. And I would also say that I always said, okay, since it was our turn in the Senate and I wasn't allegedly in charge of the farm bill, I'll ride point. And I knew I had Colin, you know, right with me. But I would tell everybody involved in the farm bill, all commodities, all farm organizations, everybody up and down the supply line, everything else, you got to ride with me. I don't want to have to look around and say, oh, my God, you know, you're sort of leading the herd, and all of a sudden the herd's gone. I said, you can ride on the left flank or the right flank. That's fine by me. But stay hitched. We got to have you in order to pass the farm bill. We got a couple of things working here. What I think it was 1915 when we first had the range war between the packers and the livestock producers. We're in a bad place there. We don't need that in going into a farm bill. I used to ask the cowboys what they wanted in the farm bill, and they said, just, you know, leave us alone. That's not the case now. I know there's been a lot of price differential. But when you see Chuck Grassley having Merrick Garland, the distinguished Attorney General of the United States, asking questions as to whether or not parents are terrorists, that's right there, rather unbelievable. But and then at the last 30 seconds, he said, by the way, how's that Justice Department investigation with the Packers? How many times have we gone through this? Now, I know there's a lot of blood pressure out there with those price differentials. But Chuck's idea, and he's had it for some time, and I think even Deb Fisher signed on with it, and, you know, quite a few Republicans. Why on earth would you force people like Mark Gardner out there in southwest Kansas? They raise Angus bulls, one of the best operations in the country. And he's got to deal with national beef, and they did that years back. And obviously, they get a better price because of the quality of the beef that they raise. Why force that person to take 50% and put it on the spot market and take a price cut when 70% of the critters that are being sold are under contract? I think we can work this out. I'm not sure we have to have a great big investigation. Texas A&M, according to AgriPulse and others, the North American Meat Association folks weighed in here recently and said that these kind of activities do us no good and over the long term could be very counterproductive. And I agree with that. Now, I'm not trying to take sides so much in saying this is an issue that's very hard to resolve. It pops up, you know, too many times. And it's very typical of the kind of thing that can throw us a real curveball to finally get somebody together and say, now look, we got to get a farm bill. We have to have certain, you know, certainty and predictability, and we owe that to our farmers and ranchers. We don't need to go into what we did in 2014 when John Boehner got upset with the dairy program. He was always upset with the dairy program. And so, you know, nothing new, so he didn't go anywhere. And so we had a CR that is a continuing resolution. It wasn't a CR. We don't call that with a farm bill. We just call it an extension. That's not fair to our producers, especially given the circumstances that we're into. I had hoped the president, when he Zoom meeting with President Xi, would at least mention that hopefully they will continue that first tranche that was agreed to by the previous president. That's $80 billion worth of exports. It's good to have that country dependent on us for their food supply. I know they're not behaving themselves, and they are a real problem right now, along with Russia, for that matter. That did not come up, however. Perhaps that was not the best time to bring it up. But that expires in December here, you know, coming up. So that's a real problem. I don't know, Colin. It ain't like it used to be. That sounds like a couple of former senators trying to tell people what, you know, what they ought to do. But we got to quit this business of being in such sad shape that the ranking member and the chairperson are not even talking with regards to the Senate. I think probably the Senate will be a lot closer politically. I think the Republicans are getting ahead of themselves by saying, oh, we're going to have a sweep simply because of Virginia and New Jersey and what happened there. But clearly, I think this administration has made some mistakes, and it's like Garfield in the hole, you know, quit digging. But I think they're going to keep coming with a very ideological agenda that is counter to what most people think, especially out in farm country. And I worry about the regs coming back, WOTUS, endangered species, et cetera, et cetera. Colin, they're going to have climate counselors running all over Minnesota. I'm trying to get the Kansas National Guard to keep them out of Kansas.
Well, on that note, I'm going to take moderator's prerogative. Ask the first question. I see we've already got one other person in line. After that, would encourage the rest of you that are interested in asking questions, please do so. But we see the House set today to vote on the Build Back Better Act, this $1.75 trillion reconciliation package that is pretty widely expected to take a bit of a haircut once it gets to the Senate. But the Senator Stabenow and her staff seems to have the idea that this $90 billion in agri and rural funding that is in this bill can and should be added right into the Farm Bill baseline. That would give them some more money to work with, especially on conservation programs in the next Farm Bill. There's been some pushback on that from some other corners of policy, but I would be interested in the thoughts of the two former chairmen on this. And I'll start with you, Chairman Peterson. Does that money go into the baseline? And if it does, are the committees bound, do you think, by what is in this reconciliation package, the language that it says on how that money should be used, or can that baseline funding be used elsewhere?
All right. I think it's a real question about whether this can be put into the baseline, given where they're putting this money. What I'm hearing from people is that they think it's a real question. And it could potentially cause significant problems because you've got a lot of money that's put into the agriculture, and it's going to expire at some point. And that's what I'm hearing from people. I don't know, Pat might know better than I do, but I don't think you can necessarily just manufacture baseline out of thin air. You know, when I had to deal with this issue as chairman, it was a huge problem for me. And it held up the farm bill in 2008 for about a year, kind of over this question. So I don't think it's going to necessarily translate into baseline. And what the committee will do, if they have to actually figure out how to pay for this or how to keep it going, I think is a very good question.
Senator Roberts?
I don't know why we want to do this. Well, I know why we want to do this, because I know that conservation, and for that matter, nutrition, specialty crops, God bless cherry trees in Michigan, they're on the list for, you know, we go through all this when we have a conference. And these are priorities for Senator Stabenow. I'm not trying to blame her. I mean, that's, you know, these kinds of things come to the, you know, number one, two, three, four. But you're opening up the on the Democrat side. I share the concern with my good friend from Minnesota. I don't know why everybody thinks that the CBO is something that came down from on high, that we can believe every number. I used to fuss with them all the time, so did Colin. I think I found out that they had two people in the entire budget organization of the Congress that knew anything about agriculture. Two. And I used to fuss with them, and especially about crop insurance. Of course, I'm, you know, pretty partial to that. And, you know, they kept, you know, saying the cost is would be exorbitant. And I said, have you ever stopped to think about if we didn't have it and what the cost would be for a disaster program, which is a disaster to pass and a disaster to implement? So I hope that we can keep that sacrosanct. I don't know why we're opening up the farm bill in the midst of a reconciliation bill, which is a wish list for the progressive wing of the Democrat Party, and endangering the whole damn farm bill. I mean, if you open it up, you open it up, and we always have our critics. So I think it's something we really ought to think about. I'm not trying to question Senator Stabenow's priorities, and if you can get more money for conservation, if you get more money for specialty crops, and you get more money for nutrition, why, and that's what you believe in, and you are in leadership, why, with Mr. Schumer, why, I get it. But on the other side of it, I think there's a heck of a lot more danger in doing that, and I do not think that there's a guarantee that it ends up in the ag baseline. That's always a problem in of itself. I agree with Colin.
That's our show for today. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.